Welcome back to the Current of Emergency Management. On this episode, we will be talking about burnout.
Welcome to the Current of Emergency Management.
Welcome back to the Current of Emergency Management. I'm Cody Powell here with my co-host, Dr. Maribel Martinez-Mejia.
Hello, Cody, and welcome to everybody.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. I'm trying to wake up. I had a two-hour nap. It's a Sunday, so I took my two-hour nap after church today. So I'm trying to wake up.
Yeah. We keep trying to explain to Mattis, our six-year-old, that Sunday is a day of worship and rest.
Yes.
We usually don't have a problem at church with worship, but it's the rest afterwards that we're struggling to understand.
He wants to go run and play.
It's no different.
Go somewhere.
The only difference between Sunday and a day during the week is there's no school or homework or anything on Sunday, so that means more playtime.
There you go. Gets playtime with his daddy and mama.
Yeah. He's playing with some neighbor kids right now, riding bikes, getting energy out.
Oh, there you go.
Well, let's jump in with our standard disclaimer. Both Maribel and I are working full-time in emergency management. However, this podcast is not a part of our normal job. Therefore, any opinions are our own and not a reflection of our employer.
But what we can say is Cody does work for a county emergency management office, and I am more on the regional side.
There we go. We may have finally gotten our disclaimer rhythm back down.
There you go.
So
I think I changed it a little bit. I can't remember what I was supposed to say, but we're good.
I think we got the gist of it.
There you go.
It's funny that we have to have so many disclaimers nowadays. But you know, it is what it is. If you need help going to sleep at one point, look at the FCC regulations on advertisements.
Oh my goodness. No, thank you.
And then also, if you're ever wondering why, if I ever mention anything, I say we don't have any affiliation, you'll understand if you've read the FCC's requirements on advertising.
You read them that often, huh, Cody?
I read them once, but no, it's not something I ever want to read again. You come to the conclusion that just if anytime you're mentioning anything, if you'll just say whether or not you're affiliated with it, you kind of cover all bases. Mm. Yeah, it's crazy. And I understand a lot of it comes from the, the cryptocurrency.
Oh, yes.
What was that?
All the stuff
that you make.
Are you talking about like all the lawsuits and all the, not just the investments that are in?
The like you make art and you turn it into the thing, the NFT, non-fungible token.
Oh,
yeah. A lot of it came from the NFT and podcasters pushing their NFT, but not saying they're affiliated with it. And, yeah.
We don't have any of that. So we're good.
No, we can't figure out how to get our Discord set up. I don't think we're in danger of trying to sell NFTs.
I know you mentioned you were setting up something with the podcast, and I was like, what is this? I don't think I've seen anything on my email.
I haven't seen
it. You're trying out same thing.
That's so funny. I haven't figured out how to share you on it yet.
Okay. There you go. It's like on our social media. It's like, I can't figure out how to share it. So I'm then stuck with doing all the posts, and I'm like, I need to figure out how to share this.
Yeah. I don't know.
I need to get some of the younger crowd to help me.
Right. Well, yeah. No. There's because you can share that. So what she's referring to is Notion. If anybody uses Notion, and what I'm trying to do is set up a calendar. It's a shared calendar for Maribel and I, so that because right now we're texting each other a lot. Hey, when are you available to record? This guest can come here. Are you available? You know. So I'm trying to set up this calendar, but also use it as like our ideas. You know, we have an idea for an episode, we can put it in there, and it kind of helps you with the management, the back end side of the podcast. But you can share stuff at kind of a granular level. So I can create five calendars that all feed into the master calendar, but you're only shared on one of those. And so it kind of helps you let all of your information feed up into one place, but also keep it safe from and only sharing it with people you want. Well, that's the problem, Maribel. I've figured out how to set up the different calendars, but I haven't figured out how to share on them yet. Sure. So I'm working on it.
It's way secure. Can you share with
anybody? I don't have to worry about anybody knowing about my grocery store trip to the store on Saturday.
Can't calendars. Do that. Nope. Playtime here. Nope.
That's funny. Well, so today, what we're talking
about.
It
is good. It keeps us having a good, like, work-life balance. And I know we were talking before the show, is having that balance, right? A healthy balance.
Yeah, and really a lot of what we're talking about today, too. We started last year. Man, was that last season? That may have been the first season.
Oh, the mental health?
Yeah, the burnout episode.
The burnout. I think that was the first season.
Yeah, we did. That was the first. Anyway, we've had an episode in the past about burnout, and we said it would probably be the first of several around that same topic. So, and Maribel and I just really chit-chatting about a few different things and realized, like, we need to be recording this conversation because what we're talking about really goes into burnout, mental health. We've got wildfire season coming up. A lot of people are gearing up for eclipse planning and everything that goes involved in that. And we were just talking about kind of the stresses that were going on and decided that we would, kind of really focus more on that for this episode and have a deeper dive into that conversation.
Yes. So with emergency management, you can always have something in the works, right? Whether it's updating your emergency operations plan, it's having meetings, coordinating special events, like I said, real events. Hopefully you're not busy tonight with severe weather coming in. Then it's all the expectations of, okay, if we do have severe weather, you got to sound the sirens. North Texas area sounds the sirens also for big hail size. So that makes you be a little bit more activated in the EOC. Make sure you're putting out public messaging after the storm hits, right? You're coordinating with all your response agencies, making sure that everything is good. So you always have to stay on top of things, right? It's a different type of stress because you're just like, okay, again, that mental checklist we talked about at one time, Cody, is just making sure that you've taken care of everything. So in case something did happen, right? You just want to make sure you covered all your bases.
Right. And some of it is, what does that look like? What does cover all your bases look like? And we'll dive deep into that more as we go along this episode. But I think one of the things, if you're fine with it, Maribel, lead off with one of the things that is very much around our field. And one, it's something that I don't think we have hidden, but haven't been extremely open with. And that was one of the things that Maribel and I both had talked about. Maybe we should be a little bit more open with it, which is our faith. And interestingly, I think that the fact that this podcast exists is partially attributed to our faith. And the reason that I say that is because Maribel and I have probably known each other and even work together as neighbors, because this is when you were with a city, and that city was a neighbor to my county, right, before we really developed a friendship. And I think that the start of that came after we talked about our faith. I don't know if you've ever thought about that, Maribel, but if you think I'm wrong.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's right.
It was really when we had a conversation about our faith that allowed us to be friends. And I'm going to go out on a limb and Maribel, like I said, jump in, correct me if you think I'm wrong. I think some of that is a shared moral standard, and that allows for the safety of a friendship to develop.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, I think so. Absolutely. Is having that, we're able to kind of share the faith, but also the respect for each other and our families, right?
Right. And because we're similar in age, in you know, of opposite sex. So there's always the, even not a potential for something to develop, but you're also always concerned about optics, right? And so when you meet someone and you know you have a shared foundation of faith that you both believe in and are both adhere to, and that for anything to develop there would be a violation of your faith, would be a sin, then it kind of helps with that safety of being able to have a friendship and be able to get closer, knowing what exactly we have the same shared value, so we know what that line is, right?
Right.
I think for me, it actually even got better when I met your husband. And for the first time that I met him, we were talking about faith. He was sharing, he's going to yell at me now. What is the quarterback?
Oh, Derek Carr with the Raiders. Yeah. Yeah, he is going. John's, like, what? You forgot his name?
John's listening to this, throwing something right now. You don't remember his name? If you don't know, Maribel's husband is a huge Raiders fan.
A very huge Raiders fan, even though they lose. I mean, you have to be a big fan to stick with them. I lost after loss.
So what you're saying, being a Raiders fan is a lot like being a Cowboys fan?
Pretty much. And I'm a Cowboys fan, so such a winning team here.
Do y'all like do an over-under on who's going to be worse? How does that work?
No.
Because you can't have a bet that whoever's team makes it to the Super Bowl, they win the bet, because then it's just a long-standing bet that nobody will ever win.
Yeah, nobody will. I don't know. He keeps pulling. He was talking about the draft and all this stuff today, so he keeps hoping. Just like us Cowboys fans, we keep hoping.
Yeah, well, hope's, you know, hope's something. Hope floats.
There you go.
Yeah. But I think when he and I met and were able to have those conversations, it, you know, really solidifies kind of what your family is about. And then I know you met my wife and yes, kids absolutely. As well.
She's a sweetheart. Yeah.
And so it helps to be able to develop a friendship with, there's nothing open for misinterpretation. And it was in some of those conversations that we were able to have that we first started talking about the podcast. And so in a lot of ways, our faith is what allowed for this to grow and to happen. I know for Maribel and I, we have a shared faith. And then we start talking about what does that mean for our job and stress? So whenever we have a conversation about stress and burnout, when that's just Maribel and I, then a lot of times that conversation involves faith. And that was one of the things we wanted to dive into a little bit more here and talk about how that looks for us, but then also talk about how having, you know, that type of foundation is really what helps us to be able to deal with the stresses of the job.
Yeah, Cody, I couldn't imagine doing this particular job for me without my faith, because it does for me bring that calm in the chaos of what our job is. But also to have, you know, yourself and other friends in our region with that same faith foundation that, you know, I'll get texts in the morning thinking about you, praying for you. I know it's been several times you've texted, you know, prayers or text, knowing that I was going to have certain things going on that day. It just helps you, you know, face the day, face those issues, face that moment of crisis, and gets you through it, knowing that, you know, God's got you, but also your friends are rooting for you and praying for you too.
That, I mean, sometimes it's hard for me especially with people who are exploring faith and trying to find answers. And sometimes it's very hard for me to explain certain things, especially when it is a question of faith, because like you said, getting through the hard times and knowing, for me, it's the ultimate, it's knowing ultimately, you know, what is going to happen allows me to not be so afraid of what's in front of me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But then you also have that foundation And a lot of times I think for some people it's experience. And for me, it's going back and looking at life and all of the different things that led to where I am now and how easily that could have been very different.
Right.
And for me, it's difficult to explain not having faith, because looking at that, to me, that says that that must be designed, right? There's a grand designer. And mm-hmm. and so it's hard for me to accept the idea of chaos where everything just happens. You know what I mean?
Right.
But we deal a lot in chaos in our job.
Right. The chaos in you know, people being impacted, you know, whether it's damage to their homes, loss of life. It's just that those life impact, you know, disaster days, right? That are people are dealing with the worst day in their lives, and you are there to help them get through it, but also, you know, help them. And sometimes you may not do it personally, but help set the foundation to get response and recovery there to help them along the way, right? But it's good to fall back on. Like you said, you're talking about experiences. You learn a lot going through all of that. But it's always knowing that, you know, you have faith you're going to go through that, even though you're here for a bigger purpose, like you said.
Well, even if you take the faith portion out of it, if you remove the grand design theory, right, then there's something that's still interesting about what you said. I know someone, she's a PhD researcher at a large university here in Texas, and a lot of her life's work is founded or revolves around communication during disasters, more specifically during flooding. And I shouldn't say during, but communication about flooding. And so teaching homeowners what your insurance covers and all of this, what does it mean to live in a floodplain, working with realtors. So a lot of communication related to flooding. All of that is because of an experience she had when she was young, where her family lost their home due to a flood. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know, their insurance didn't cover what happened. And so that becomes her mission in life is and all of her research is based around that. That's exactly what we're talking about, is that those experiences sometimes, especially going through them, are rough. But all of us, I'm sure, could come up with hundreds and hundreds of examples of someone who did something as a result of their experience. With faith, everything around you can be going bad and going wrong and falling apart. And for me, and for I know Maribel, we know that if this is the worst is to happen, and whatever, if everything that's fallen apart somehow includes me, then we still have eternity. And so there's peace and comfort in that. That's not the case for everybody. There's a lot of people who go through that who don't have that foundation. And then, you know, there's a lot, there's the chaplain corps, there's a lot who want to come in and help, and all the faith-based organizations that are involved after disasters. And that's a big reason why, is they want to share that message of hope through coming and helping.
Right.
There's some who get it wrong. Have you ever dealt with that?
Some that get it wrong?
Yeah. One of the things,
they're there for themselves.
No.
Or to cheat the system or what? Which I've seen some of that, you know, which is so wrong. But
I think a lot of times faith-based organizations or churches who want to help during a disaster don't always understand what help means or what that looks like. And they want, they're evangelists. They want to evangelize. And I think, and I've said this to people who've wanted to be involved before, Your ministry is your presence. It's not your words.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see that both ways, right? I get, you know, immediately after disasters, you know, the wildfires in Texas Panhandle come to mind. People just want to help. There's a right way, right? There's donations you can do. But there's also, I know so many people that have gotten help by actually going to the churches to get things or to talk to people. I think there's some good in that. And, you know,
I agree with you there.
Yeah. I think we had a previous podcast. We were talking about, you know, what is, who was it with? It was like four podcasts ago. We were talking about, it was a little bit about faith, right?
Yeah. That was with Julie, her with research Julie. On the role of faith-based organizations in disasters.
Right. So I think there could be some good to that, you know, as long as they know you're asking for, you know, donations of whether it's food or whatever, what you're going to get. But if they can work through that, I think that's something that has really helped. I see them, you know, request, you know, they have to have the right network to request the right things as those needs come up. And they've been a real immediate impact to families while, you know, as those donations come in, the foundations, you know, have a set way to distribute that money to those impacted families, which sometimes it can take a little while. And that's not what the family needs immediately. Now, they don't need like a tons of clothes because they don't have anywhere to take it if they've lost all their home. But there's got to be a balance of that. And definitely if you feel, you know, pushed to give, you know, is that God telling you, hey, you know, go give this? Who are we to say that's not God speaking to them? So sometimes I'm kind of mixed on, yes, you got to go through the emergency management challenges, but I think there's a lot of good that comes also out of those networks that are not within any structure. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. So let me clarify what I'm saying. I'll be a little more clear. I wouldn't let someone from a faith-based organization stand up on a box in the family assistance center and start preaching a sermon.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I'm,
that's not what they need at that moment.
Right. You and that's what I mean. Yes, your ministry is your presence, not your words. Like, offer to pray with somebody, but be okay if they say no. You know, right. Not everyone shares the same faith. And you have to be able to be the light in their darkness at the level that they need at that time is what I'm saying.
Right. And that, I agree.
Give them a hug, sit with them, ask them if you can pray with them. If they say no, be okay with that.
Right.
Right. Because your presence is still there from a place of love to try and help people, but they don't necessarily want to be preached to in that moment. You know what I mean?
No, I totally agree with you. I love our mission. Statement from our church is something they say every Sunday, and I love it because it's pursuing Christ and loving people, and you love people in different ways. And you know, we're all not perfect, but there are different ways to minister, and not everybody, right, needs to come to your church. There's other great churches. We are there for one reason, right, to pursue Christ, and there, like I said, there's just different ways to minister to people. And at that time, like you said, you need to be there for them, not preaching.
And what's interesting is, you know, there's the big three, right? Politics, faith, and money. The three impolite things to talk about. It's getting more and more with modern culture. There's so much going on there, and we stay away from a lot of that as best we can. But what's interesting is that even in our field, it's still somewhat of, it kind of falls into that category of things you don't talk about, but we're the field that actively works with faith-based organizations.
Right.
And I mean, there's FEMA guidance about working with faith-based organizations. In fact, there was funding that opened up for FBOs a few years back, mitigation funding, I believe. Don't quote me on this because I may be getting this wrong, but if I remember, it was mitigation, some of the mitigation funding that opened up for faith-based organizations. What was important is I remember the reasoning they gave for why that funding was available, which mm-hmm. was due to the critical role in the recovery of a community.
Right. Yeah. After a disaster happens, you know, if you are at a church or even people that aren't, go to that church to get information. There are often reception centers that people flee to if they have to evacuate their neighborhood. So emergency management organizations work with them to set agreements in place. if there is information you need to get out to the community, they know their community. They work with the neighbors around the area. So it really is a great communication channel and partnership working with the churches and non-faith and all the other organizations, faith-based organizations.
Yeah, FBA. And that's a good term. I don't always like the blanket terms, I guess, that will come out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, oh, we got a new term. It's like, do we really need a new term for that? But like with the faith-based organizations, I like that all-encompassing because it is very broad. So this isn't planned, but let's name a few. What is it? Southern Baptist Men,
Texas Baptist Men, Samaritan's Purse,
the Methodist. There's a Methodist one. I'm trying to remember the name.
Oh, there's so many.
Islamic Relief.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Salvation's Army, kind of. Catholic Charities, kind of. I'm trying to think now. I know we've hit the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm. But you hear these names anytime we're to major disaster, right? We're talking, it's one that's big. These are names you hear every time. That are involved in helping with the relief. So I don't think the argument that faith-based organizations aren't critical in recovery could, hopefully no one's making that argument, because if they are, I would like to see the evidence.
Right.
But even in critical, them playing a critical role in us having a lot of guidance, but it's still not a conversation, you know, probably because we're government employees, right? Yeah. But it's still not a conversation that's considered okay to have even within our community. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And there's a lot there. There's a lot of reasons why. You don't want to offend people. You don't want to turn people off. You get into a lot of that. And I understand a lot of reasons why sometimes it's just easier to not talk about.
Do you have a lot of meetings with your ministerial alliance there within your county? I know that's something that we were trying to get going. Where I used to work, and they were just a great group of people to work with. You needed something, you reached out, and they were awesome. But ministerial alliances are really a really good resource.
The first meeting we had for that was in December of 19.
Oh, this past year?
No, December of 19.
Of 2019. Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought December 19.
How well do you think those meetings continued?
Really?
It was about a month before.
Between
COVID.
You and them, or do they
yes,
continue?
Yes,
to meet?
Yes. Between me and okay. them. Yeah. So we had started a just like what you're talking about, to reach out, try and bring everybody together for working together in disaster. And that first meeting that we had to talk about that and just kind of give the direction for what we're looking for was about a month before COVID hit.
So you didn't get to use them during COVID?
No, and didn't. I mean, I wouldn't have needed, but it, you know, like so many things that started right before COVID, then yeah. That's something that you just need to start over. There's no picking up and trying to keep that moving forward.
I know some of our churches within our alliance, they actually got just a bunch of hand sanitizer and just started distributing to the churches, but they didn't have a place. They were actually getting some of the stuff from FEMA. They didn't have a place to store it, so they reached out to us to see if they could store it and then distribute from there. And so we helped them out. And then later they got a bunch of other stuff, but just for the communities, right? And they would open it up for the people in their community as well.
Yeah. We've reached out to them for space before, and that's space like a upcoming public event or mm-hmm. we need help right now. Like we need some space yeah. right now for, you know, for whatever reason and never had an issue there. We took over an entire church during one incident and they were happy to allow us to. And so the use and critical role that they play, you know, what day in, day out, but especially during disasters and emergencies, the ones that always open up, like warming centers and stuff like that, anytime you're ever, you know, when we're talking about spontaneous volunteers and in the all the problems of all the help, there's almost always churches behind it. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing, that it's just the culture.
Right. They always jump in to help.
Now, are there too many across the South? I mean, we may not need to get into that argument, but if you're not from the Southern.
Well, I think a lot of that is okay. You know, there's a disaster and they want to jump to it, but it's also, we need to work with the communities to kind of phase it right through the immediate response and then short-term recovery and then long-term recovery. I think there's always opportunities to help the community if they've gone through a big disaster. I think we as emergency managers kind of need to help kind of guide that a little better.
That's probably.
But sometimes we don't, sometimes once it hits the recovery, right, you let your community services departments kind of take that over too sometimes. You're kind of more now on the grant side, just kind of submitting the paperwork on the recovery side. So it just depends on your jurisdiction.
Because I've never worked for a church or I've volunteered at my home church for a couple of years, but not like paid staff. But I would imagine they're looking to see what other churches in their community are doing. And I think I would support this from data that, you know, when you see like a shelter open up at a church, then you would see several start to follow, good or bad, because somebody may, oh, that's a good idea, our church should do that, or whether it's, oh, they did it, we need to. Either way, the end result is now there's more shelters for people, right?
Right.
But to your point, to prevent that from happening and having the most widespread impact, then maybe you if you've talked with all of them and say, hey, open up yours for from here to here, and then y'all open up yours, and then, you know, and kind of have more of a controlled outcome.
Right. If you can. I know during the winter storm, we had several churches reach out to us as we knew this was not this was going to be a longer event. We were really going to be without power for a while. And so we already had a list of churches that say, hey, if y'all need us, we'll open up. And then it came to that point where, okay, we really need the help because this is a bigger issue. And so we picked, oh, I can't remember if it was 5 or 7 different churches and called them up, and they were like, yep, we got it. And it was just nice to know that, you know, they had everything. We sent them the cots, and some water and food, but as far as running everything, they did it all, which was nice.
Do you ever have you ever had issues with either faith-based organizations or individuals that have trouble taking the answer of, I appreciate it, we'll let you know if we need something?
Not an issue of it. I think they understand, but you also got to make sure that you work with them and communicate with them, right? Let them know what's going on. We had a separate listserv for those types of partners, so that, you know, we were working with them, right? It's a partnership, and we may not need them for this specific time, but there could be an opportunity in the future, and they were understanding of that. I think even during COVID, you know, I reached out to our church and I really needed a lead point to take, and coordinate with our different churches in our jurisdiction. And of course they all knew the, you know, ministers know each other and with different faiths and everything. And they took the lead. They built a separate Facebook site. And as there was needs within the community, they would let us know. So it was a little bit more coordinated effort. But I think everybody's appreciative of just kind of being able to help, but wanting specifics on how they could help.
No, I definitely understand what you're saying there. I think there are times, especially when something's going on, like I'll give you an example, big fire that we had in the water. It didn't matter how many times we said, thank you, but please stop bringing water. People were still bringing water.
Yes. And we've had those over, and then we're stuck with a bunch of water.
Yeah.
But then after we just took it, you know, you take it to Meals on Wheels or the food bank, and you're still giving out to people who needs it. But
right. That's the best example of what I'm referring to, where it's like, mm-hmm. I know you want to help. I appreciate it. we don't need anything right. Are you sure we can go to, we're good. Thank you.
Yeah. And sometimes it's good to have those partners again in the community that it's not from a government, you know, social media that says, don't bring anything else, you know, donate, is them saying, look, showing pictures, look, we're really full with water. Just hold off. If there's anything else we need, we'll let you know, but it at the same, it doesn't come from the emergency management offices, but you're still working with them. You know, they're saying, hey, we've got lots of water. Cause you know, these public groups pop up after a disaster and it's like ways to help whatever jurisdiction. And a lot of good things come from it, right? You get different resources from all over the country, but sometimes you just get a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole
lot. But I've also been on the end where we're, I don't know. I think I told you the story about the winter weather storm where we're going to open, I think it was 9 different points of distribution sites for our water. And it was a Sunday morning and our deliveries for water didn't make it through that night like we expected. And it was 7 a.m. and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to open these 9 different points of distribution with no water. And we got to, I was praying hard all the way to the emergency operations center. And all of a sudden, we had water overflowing. We had people from across the U.S. that came, hey, we've got water. Where do you want us to deliver it to? And so we were directing. We had 2 FEMA trailers show up at our emergency operations center. And we were able to get them to different sites. I mean, you talk about the power of prayer. I was like, oh, wow. I shared that, you that story, right?
It yeah, just- no, you did. And it's funny because it's like the to me, that's – faith is a weird – concept at times because there's oftentimes this misconception that it means inaction, right? Mm-hmm. And the best example I can give to that is, I think I've told you this joke. The family lives in a neighborhood that's being evacuated because of there's a flood coming. And so mm-hmm. the police department's going around on their with their sirens and telling everybody to get out. And they come by their house and say, hey, y'all need to get your stuff and get out. And the dad says, no, we're a family of faith and God will save us. And so then the waters start to come and they're in the first floor of the house. So they're on the second story. And then the fire department comes by with a boat and says, open the window, get in the boat. We can still get you out of here. And he says, no, we're a family of faith. God will save us. And then the waters keep coming. And now they're on the roof. And a helicopter comes in and drops them a ladder. It says, grab the ladder. We'll get you out of here. And they said, no, we're a family of faith. God will save us. And then the waters keep coming. They all drown. And then they're at judgment. And the dad says, God, I told everyone you would save us. Why didn't you save us? And God said, I sent you a police car, a fire engine, a boat, and a helicopter. What else did you want me to do? And so faith, I think a lot of times is confused with inaction. It doesn't mean you're not trying.
No,
you're doing everything you can, but it's like you said, right. There was that point where you had nothing left but the power of prayer.
Right.
There's a certain point I've done everything I could. And short of a miracle, which only one being can put mm-hmm. into action. So short of prayer, that's it. That's all I've got. But what if that water hadn't showed up, Maribel?
I don't know. We would have gone through it. I mean, I don't know. And that's why it's like, because there was so many different ways that the water got to us. I mean, like I said, it was a mix of FEMA, but it was also a mix of private citizens, churches, Walmart. And so now, like I have hesitation of, you know, people that feel compelled to, you know, take something to the disaster area. I get, you know, the inundating of people donations, you know, that's a no-no in emergency management. Who are we to say that, you know, God hasn't put it on somebody's heart to send that to somebody because they need it, because they're going to be at that moment of need.
That's a tough one.
I know. Because you don't want to inundate them with donations, but you want the money ultimately, right? That's going to help a person, you know, even if you get, you know, FEMA reimbursement. I think the max dollars was what, $30,000.
Oh, if, yeah, if, I think max.
It's not a lot of money.
And,
I mean,
you and know, that's not, and that's rare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't have insurance, I don't know how you recover. So any donations, you know, financial donations is definitely the best for these families. Plus they can go out and shop whatever they need, or even gift cards. But there are, you know, if they're cleaning up their house, you know, donations of cleaning supplies, trash bags, you know, for a lot of these ranches in the Texas Panhandle, they just needed feed for their cattle. They, you know, save their cattle. There's trucks and trucks of hay that were going. Something that was just, it helped that immediate need. And then behind that is all the financial donations that will come in once that committee is set. You know, there's a structure to that and how they're going to distribute the funds. And then there's that long-term loans and the FEMA reimbursement process. But that, you know, that takes
months, if not years.
To a year. Yeah.
If you're not in the field of emergency management and listen to this podcast, I know we've said this in the past, so I want to be clear about one thing. We always, when we're talking about donations, say send money. And there's a specific reason why. And that's what Maribel just described, because that process that is going to be put in place for a committee to be formed to determine how that money will be used. And that committee is typically going to be people from nonprofits, faith-based organizations. That's what makes up the committee. In fact, if I remember correctly, and don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm correct about this. No government employee would actually be able to be on the committee. There's a liaison between OEM and the committee, right? But they wouldn't be voting on it. The money comes into a nonprofit and can be spent by that nonprofit because there is a government finance process. There's certain things you can't spend money on in government. Food is one of those, depending on the reason, right? Or city versus county. There's a lot there. Don't be like, oh, my city's violating the law by buying us lunch. There's a lot to that. But in my county, for example, in Texas, we wouldn't be able to buy food for the masses. You know what I mean? So there's a lot that can be spent. So then at that point, we send our liaison to the unmet needs committee and say, hey, can you see if that we can pay for $2,000 to feed all, you know, these people or whatever. And so then that's how that money gets used, specifically on what it's needed, when it's needed, by committee, by the people who are saying this is what we need. That's why that keeps coming up.
Yeah. And you normally designate that person that's over that different committee within your EOP. I'm trying to think of the annex.
Annex
or the volunteer ESF. Donations management, right? Oh, unless you're ESF, but it's usually under the volunteer donations management where you have the appointment letter.
Right. Or the designating fiduciary agent.
Right.
It's usually United Way or something like that.
Yeah. United Way is usually the easiest.
Right.
But even, you know, after any, you know, it could be an active shooter incident, and there's all these donations that, you know, want to flood in for the families that were impacted. It could be something dedicated specifically for that and making sure that, again, you have a process in place that you want to follow when you're dealing with so much money. And then definitely something of real significance, right? It's always good to have that in place beforehand.
But think about the reverse of that. If you want to go through your closet and donate some clothes or whatever, let's say a pair of jeans and a shirt versus donating $20. You're going to take that pair of jeans and shirt somewhere, probably a collection point that somebody set up. Let's say a faith-based organization, a church has set up a donations collection point. They're going to staff. So you're going to go through your closet, get those clothes, take it to the donation collection point where staff there is going to consolidate all of that and somehow get it to the disaster area where it's going to have to be received and sorted and stored somehow. And then whenever the report comes through that somebody needs a shirt and some pants, then that message is going to get sent to that warehouse or wherever it's being stored. It's going to get pulled and then given to someone who's now going to deliver to the person who needs it. Or when they need it, here's a gift card for $20. It's paid for out of the fund that the committee has already voted on. And then you can go to Walmart, Target, whatever is close by, and pick out stuff that fits. You know what I mean?
It is new. I mean, you just lost everything, right? You're already having a difficult time, and then to get something that, you know,
someone else didn't want. Like, let's be honest, that's what most of the donations are, is people getting rid of the stuff they don't want.
Yeah.
And so that's why when you're on our side of it and you see the result of that, that's why we say, don't send clothes, donate $20. Because that $20 is going to go to whatever someone needs when they need it. There's no storage of it. There's no distribution, none of that kind of stuff. And so the process gets, it actually gets aid to those people quicker.
Yeah.
And it's specific to their need. So that, I just felt like, because we do say that a lot, so I felt like explaining why is important.
Yeah, it's just the logistics, right? It's a lot of logistics when everybody's just trying to coordinate the disaster. This is just another, another bigger thing to deal with. And when you're already strapped, you know, you're working long hours, you may be limited on resources and staffing. It makes it a little bit difficult. Now, if a faith-based organization can step in and maybe provide some of that structure, but at the same time, many times they get inundated with just the amount of different donations. It may be good in the immediate, but, you know, and even, you know, a week later, 2 weeks later, those needs are different. So there can be, like I was saying earlier, a little bit more coordinated, streamlined way to get some of those donations if they were needed. But you just have to be careful on what you're asking when you're asking.
But even with all that, a lot of that process is driven by the faith-based organizations. That's the collection center at your community. Where was it? Odds are it was probably at a church. Mm-hmm. If not, it was probably staffed by people from a local church.
Right.
Set up at a Walmart or whatever. And so the critical role of the faith-based organizations within disasters, community preparedness, recovery. Have you ever heard an argument to their role?
The faith-based organizations?
Yeah.
No. What do you mean as far as of them coming to the table?
Well, there's so much happening in the world with the with policies on, you know, prayer in school, for example. Mm-hmm. That line of thinking, that's what I'm asking. Have you heard of any pushback on the role of faith-based organizations in disasters or allowing them funding, you know, that kind of stuff?
No, I have not. If anything, everybody's excited and pushing to get them on board. Even everywhere I've been, it's also been driven by our city leadership, county leadership. Of course, we're in the state of Texas, but I think people see the value of what they bring, the sense of community, working with the community, that kind of multiplier for staff and volunteerism.
So what you're saying is that the beacon of hope for faith in government is emergency management. Is that what you're saying? We're the one area of government that faith is, and faith-based organizations is still without question allowed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's a way to put it.
What's interesting about that, though, and I said that partially joking, but as I'm saying it, I'm thinking about it, is you go back to the hierarchy of needs, right? And mm-hmm. And the higher up you go, when you get into self-actualization of needs and stuff, but at the very basic level of hierarchy of needs is security and safety, right? Food, security, water, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so
I think you got it.
We're in the field of emergency management, which is disasters. As you were saying earlier, sometimes the worst times in these people's lives. I do find it interesting, and I've just thought of this, so I haven't fully developed this thought, but I find it interesting that like we said, the one place faith-based organizations are still completely allowed in government is in the field that deals with emergencies and disasters when things are at their worst. Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting that yeah. field still allows the faith-based organizations without question. There's, like you said, right. have you heard any dissent to them being involved? No, there isn't. That I just find that interesting.
Yeah. Good point.
So I don't get too deep in that because I don't want to say anything crazy without thinking about it, but that's definitely something I will be thinking about. But with that, let's roll into a little bit more here. One of the things that we talked about in the storm for you and I is faith. But we also, as we talked about, even within our beliefs, God doesn't tell us to sit there and just wait for an answer to appear. we still need to be working, right? And we were having a conversation at the beginning about asking ourselves even the question, why more often? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. Do you want to expand some on kind of what you were saying about that?
Yes. Yeah, so it's again, going back to emergency management, you can always find busy work, but you don't want to be busy just to be busy. You've got to understand why we're here, what we're doing, you know, are we helping people out? You know, we're here for the greater good. And you're also here, you know, for your family, and helping others.
One of the things I find a lot of times with the busy for the sake of busy is just, for me, it's asking the question, why? If you come to me and say, Cody, we're going to collect all this information as a region, right? Whatever that is, we're going to work on this regional project. We're going to put all of this information together. We're going to collect all this information. Okay. What for? So we'll have it. Right. Okay. But then what are we going to do with it? Well, then you'll have all of the information. Okay. But why? Well, in case you need it, what would I need it for? you know what I mean? I have literally had that exact conversation with people.
It reminds me of some activations. We were just, you know, back in the old days. I don't know if I should say the situational awareness software. And, you know, it was driven that we got to document every little thing, every conversation we had. And I was like, why? I mean, I get, you know, major events that happen, absolutely, because, you know, day after the event, you're going to be briefing this out to the city council or commissioner's court, and you need to know timelines. But I was like, why are we just creating work for ourselves? Why do we need all this data? I mean, is anybody 10 years from now going to care what all we did, like minute to minute, second to second?
Right. And well, I mean, let me ask you this way. I know nothing about EM. I just showed up to work in your EOC and you handed me a 214 in 1 minute or less. Tell me what I'm supposed to put on there.
Me now?
Yeah.
Major things that happened while you were in the position, just documenting major events.
What's major?
Oh, you're going to go down this route.
I don't know what's major.
Oh, you're starting with EM. Well, see, that's the thing. I wouldn't have you doing this on there. Right.
If y'all don't remember, Maribel's always had like 500 staff and never.
Hopefully they're trained before they're in an EOC.
But
well, they'll know the why. They're not, I'm like, why are you asking me this? You should have been listening to training last week.
That's true. But have you ever been in a class where you have to do a 214 during the class? And they're explaining
are
what
you... Are you serious?
You've never been in a class where you've had to do one for class?
No.
I'm like,
why?
Yeah, you're supposed to fill out 214 in your 300 class.
Are you serious?
Yeah, 300, 400.
No, it took that like 15 years ago, but no, we didn't do that.
Oh, yeah. That's part of the curriculum now.
Oh, my goodness.
You fill out a 214 during the class. And the goal is to teach you how to fill it out. Hmm. It's not your first time on an incident. But then you start, like, I'm like, but we're doing a scenario. Do I put scenario stuff on here? Do I put real stuff? Like, yeah, I start getting into those kind of questions in my head. But the explanations that people have given for what goes on there, I'm like, why are you putting so much on there? Wow. It's everything that you have. If you had a conversation with somebody, you need to put that down so you can go back. And I'm like, man, I feel like you'd be filling it out all day.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, like when we have an ambulance going on an EMTF deployment, then I tell them, anytime you go anywhere, starting mileage, ending mileage, where are you going? When you start, when you got there. If you get an assignment, put what that assignment is down. Something bad, you know, blow a tire and you got to wait for a tire, put that down. Something big happens, you know, put that down. But like everything you did, went out and patrolled the fire line. We raked stuff. We said, you know, I think I get it. It's if I teach them to put everything, I'll get the information we need. But I just start with the information I need.
But then you have to go through all that information. Like if you're ever looking for something.
I know.
And it's just like overkill.
Oh, and then that's all. How much of that more are they having to keep up with to turn in too? Multiple pages.
Well, it's the same with response. I've seen that on the response. Like they're monitoring every little thing. And I get that, you know, I think when early in my career, it was like, I would have the radio on nonstop. I think it was just more, okay, what are we going to need to go on next, you know, type of thing. But now it's like, why? I mean, if people need you, they're going to, you know, your cell phone's going to go off or, you know, the certain response agencies are handling it because those frameworks and processes are in place. But you're also, I mean, I get getting in tune and kind of being situational aware, like if you have a storm coming in, make sure it doesn't go tornadic and all that stuff. But sometimes it's just the small things that you're just wondering, okay, why? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And collecting information. And I'm not saying any of that's bad. It's just if I have five things to do today and I can only get three of them done, then I'm going to start prioritizing that list by things that matter.
Right.
Now, take that same concept on a bigger scale and look at some of the stuff that we do sometimes. And you start scratching your head. Like, have you ever been to a meeting? You're going to be laughing in a meeting at some point in the future. And somebody who's listened to this is going to be like, I know what she's thinking. Have you ever been to a meeting and assumed a salary for everybody there and start calculating how much money it cost for that meeting and then start questioning what you're talking about?
Yeah.
And you start to realize it at times you're maybe in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per hour for that meeting to be taking place.
Yeah.
And then,
I've been to a lot of those meetings. A meeting just to have a meeting. It's like, why are we here? Let's keep it an email.
And then you're looking at, and then look at the agenda. Figure that one out first. How many hundreds of thousands of dollars per hour is this meeting? And then look at your agenda. Mm-hmm. And go, it's worth this? What are we talking about?
Yep.
This is 600 grand an hour.
Oh my goodness.
And
it makes you think, right? And again, it's again going back to are we being busy just for the sake of busy? It's finding that balance. Where we have work obligations, right? And there's things you've got to get done and you gotta have meetings for important things and get things moving forward. But sometimes you also have to know you've got to take a break, or you've got to delegate, or there's other ways to get the same job done.
Or ask yourself, how long will this be important? Because I used to have my radio on a lot more than I do now. Mm-hmm. And what's happening? Are we going to be needed? Are we going to have to activate? Whatever the case may be. And then, I think that that's good, and that you should be that way when you're new, because you're excited. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But you get older and the disasters start to stack up, and then something that you started when you were young, because that was a good way maybe to grow your office or to show that you were involved, you know, that information statement that you put out, now that becomes the standard. Mm-hmm. And you start to ask, why am I putting this out when that's the exact same information in an email that they're getting also? You know what I mean? Yeah. You start figuring out you may have put a lot into place that 5 years from now you wish you hadn't put into place, but now that's the standard that you're following.
That could be also a good thing, right? Because you've set that standard. And I think I get what you're saying, but you're also kind of, yes, they may have gotten in other avenues, but your leadership also knows that you are engaged and that you've got it, and you're monitoring, even though you're not monitoring, you're still monitoring, but not like monitoring. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. And you're actually saying the same thing as me. What I'm saying is be careful, because you do want your leadership to know you're engaged and monitoring.
Right.
But how you let them know that early becomes the standard for how you're going to do that for potentially the rest of your career.
Yeah.
And that standard may not be practical 5 years from now. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. It could not be practical. I mean, you have to take into account, right, your staffing and...
Sure.
And if that's still a continued expectation from your leadership.
But it was a great way to look engaged, involved, like when you first got hired. Okay, yeah, they're on top of it. Maybe your predecessors didn't do that, but you're doing that. That's a good thing. So don't get me wrong. It is a good way to show that you're engaged and involved in all of those kind of things. But sometimes it may not be something you're still wanting to do. That's not a question. If you should still do it, it's beneficial, then it's just something you do you don't like.
But don't wear yourself out, because it may not be something that's actually needed. I get that.
Right.
You're creating so much work for yourself to do that later when it may not be needed.
Right. Or you're having to do that as a standard when you need to be doing something else. Not just it may not be needed, but that's now the standard, but something else is needed, but I've set the standard I now have to adhere to, right? That's one more thing that has to be done by the end of the day.
Yeah. And if it's the right thing to do, it's the right thing to do. Or sure. If you can, like I said, delegate it to other staff while you take care of it, and you have staff, then...
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not talking about setting off the sirens. I don't know if I'm going to want to keep being up at 2 a.m. in 5 years setting off sirens, so we're just going to chop them all down, right? Which, I mean, chop them all down, that's fine, but that may not work in your jurisdiction. Maribel's making faces at me now. She's like, don't cut my
sirens. Hey, I don't have sirens anymore, so I'm good.
Now you love them.
Yep.
But I think there's a lot of times that can be eliminated or work done with no real clear direction as to why.
Yeah. I just think of my whiteboard, like before COVID, I had so much stuff on my whiteboard, and then COVID hit. And then I finally got to it like a year later, and it was just all irrelevant. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense anymore. That doesn't make sense anymore.
Right. But it was important enough to put on your whiteboard.
Yeah, I know, right?
Which, if yours is like mine, that's the stuff that's the highest at the list.
Yeah.
And so it made it there, but then it became unimportant. How important was it? You know, there's a lot that we can look at that way. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one that drives me nuts is a mitigation application and having to submit a floodplain map with it. It doesn't take too terribly long, but you know what drives me nuts? It's FEMA's floodplain map. It's their map. I'm submitting their map as part of my application to them.
I'll say no comment to this. I don't want to get in trouble on this one. Okay.
Why are you in trouble? It's true. How much time might you spend, or your GIS analyst spends, bringing their map into your maps and doing that and printing it right? So if you're good in GIS and you're laughing at me right now, obviously I'm not the greatest in GIS, so it takes me some time, okay? But I'm like, it's their map.
But even then, I mean, your GIS persons may not have all these private entity thing. Or I'm thinking dam plans, but it's same inundation maps, right? It's a struggle. Yes, I'll say it's a struggle.
Well, but dam plans are local.
They are local, but you may not have some of the. You may have some of the maps. A lot of them may be paper.
All ours were paper when I got there. We digitized them, all of them.
You did digitize them?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
But we did that in our office. It wasn't even a part of anything. It was just like, why are all of these on paper? We can't.
Even those huge ones that are like fold out in the binder.
Mm-hmm.
And they just like keep unfolding and keep unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, impressive.
We had we were able to scan them all, and then we geo-referenced the scan and then traced the inundation as a new layer, so that then when you turn the image layer off, now you're left with a feature layer. Yeah, literally hand-traced all of them. But it was because it didn't make sense to have them on paper. It's like, we need to be able to see these.
Yeah.
That one, that's not what I'm talking about. That's local. Yeah. We did that locally. They asked for those maps. I'm happy to share those maps because we put a lot of work into them.
Well, you are the norm. I mean, you are out of the norm that you have all those.
Yeah. That I get. You have to create that. I'm talking about the FEMA floodplain map. Mm-hmm. I got to submit a FEMA floodplain map that shows my project here. It's your map. How about I send you a map with the project area? And since it's your map that you want me to overlay on it, you can just overlay it.
There you go.
You still on no comment road?
I'm still on no comment.
That's a great. It's so true. You know it's true. How many things do we have to create as a part of an application that exists, and even more so that exist with the agency that I'm submitting my application to? They created it.
I don't know. I guess it's just easier just to have it all in one packet.
It is. That's true. It is. It's easier if you just have it all in that packet for you. But our point of, we do a lot of work for the sake of work. Then, and sometimes you don't have a choice, but I still think about it when I'm having to make those maps. I'm like, it's their map. I think my mitigation person who's working on that grant heard me say, but it's their map, like 15 times in the last 2 weeks.
That's funny.
What do you mean they want one with the floodplain on it? It's their floodplain. I don't know. They're asking for one with the floodplain. So now I'm going and making a floodplain map over the beautiful map that I already made. I'm a little bitter. You turn the floodplain on, it just messes all your icons and stuff up, you know?
The joys of GIS, yes.
But how much of that is local? I mean, do you ever have that moment, like in the moment, where you stop and you're like, why am I doing this?
Sometimes,
something
but now...
within your control, not something you were asked to do or something that's required, something that's in your control, because you have several people who work for you.
Yes, but I'm also, I think I'm now more aware of it, you know, again, kind of going back to setting priorities, because we have a lot of things we're doing. And so I do take a moment. It's like, okay, is this really needed? Really? How much time do we need? Do other people really care? I mean, it's kind of, having that conversation, and also with the staff, you know, what do they got going on? And is this really needed? Or are we doing this just because somebody did it 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
But I do, I think I'm, I don't know. I'm just, I feel like I'm more aware of, you know, kind of going through that process is let's not create busy work just for the sake of busy work. Let's concentrate on projects that are making an impact or tasks that will get us to one of our short-term or long-term goals, right?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, having a strategic plan for your office, even if it's not something that's required, I think is beneficial and something that everyone should consider.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't have something that's guiding the work that you're doing, then it is easy to get lost in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so
for the request, I mean, I'm sure y'all are the same way of, can we do this? Or, hey, can y'all join us in doing this? And I mean, we have a very big region, and if we can absolutely help, we will. But sometimes it's like, okay, why?
Well, I think sometimes that's the problem though. Is the desire to help.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, I was trying to think before I asked this question, but now I have to, but have you ever asked me for help where I've said no? That you can think of?
I don't think so. No.
I would bet one of those times I probably shouldn't have said yes. You know what I mean? At least one, if not two. Right.
Yeah, there's a few times where I'm like, are you sure? You seem like you have a lot on your plate. And I also try to be wary, right, when we ask of people. But I know we also have deadlines. And something I've told my staff is like, let's put the meeting out there. Whoever shows. And we'll fill in the blanks as we need to, because we are such a busy region. And it's I get it. It's going to a meeting that's in person, even, you know, can take the full day.
Yeah.
And that's a day out of the office for you all.
But that's one thing, as we're talking about burnout, we talk about you know, having a battle buddy, check on each other, right? Make sure you're good. But then we, in some ways, contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing I love about our community, the EM community, not just here in the region, but anywhere I've been, is what, you know, I think we've talked about this before. It's like the mafia, you know, hard to get in, but once you're in, your family, mm-hmm. very close community. And I love that about our field, and we should be looking after each other and taking care of each other. But when, when I need help to the point that I'm going to reach out to my neighbors and ask for help, I'm in dire need, right? Because we're also, right, for the most part, very A-type personalities, can get it done. Sure, no problem. That's what we've talked about with mission creep. The problem with mission creep is our inability to say no, because we want to help, right?
Right.
So when you get to the point where you need help from your neighbors, other EMs, and you reach out, like, you know that when somebody's reaching out for help, they need help. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm busy. I got a lot going on. I got some deadlines, but man, Maribel needs help. She asked me for help. I don't want to say no. I don't want to let her down. Now I'm coming and I'm helping, but that's pushing that work back. You know,
yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And sometimes it's like, you know, it could be an incident or something else going on after hours. Then that's kind of impacting family time.
Mm-hmm.
I think of a few other responses, but it's like, well, you need to, and people will respond, right? Cause that's what we do. But I know it also takes time, you know, for them to coordinate different things, but it's what we do.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying don't ask for help.
No,
I'm just saying that this, there's a lot to the conversation of burnout and mental health in our field. And I think, right, for Maribel and I, faith is the foundation of how you deal with that. But even within that, there's still a lot that it's not an easy conversation to have, because there's so much depth and so many layers to it. Because that's one thing we talk about, right, helping your friends, help your neighbors, look after each other. But sometimes that could contribute.
Yeah. But then at the same time, I think people feel good about helping. I think it's later, right, that you didn't, you know, spend time with the family, or you didn't get this task done, that you kind of, you don't regret the help because at that moment you felt it was the right thing to do and you're glad you did it. But then later it's like you're just kind of scrambling to do whatever you need to get done.
Right. Hopefully before the next disaster hits.
Yes.
Then the cycle continues.
Meeting, your next presentation, right?
Yeah.
And there's been presentations, you know, I'll get asked to speak and I'm literally just like 10 minutes before just putting together the PowerPoint because I was like, oh, shoot. Yep, that's today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one for me that has helped. And this, I'm just sharing this because if you're in a position to be able to do something like this, at least consider it. One of the things going back to the strategic plan for the office, and I'm referencing that because one of the things that I started a few years ago is all the after hour meetings. If I don't have a specific reason to be at one, I don't go to anything after 5 o'clock anymore. And by specific, how do you define that specific reason? Is it something that supports one of our strategic goals? Mm-hmm. And so if it's just an event, you know, a meeting, and maybe it's people, you know, with a group, a community group that we're very involved with and all that, and they're having a dinner Tuesday at 6 o'clock, then the answer is no. Mm-hmm. Because that's my time at home with my family. And I came to, that was one of the controls I had to put in place when my wife said, I need you to start thinking about prioritizing family a little more, right? Now, granted, I have a great relationship with my wife. And so I understand that isn't always the case, right? As to where for her, she saw a problem and we had that communication. I'm not telling you come home early tomorrow. I'm just telling you that this is turning into a problem. I need you to think about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I did. And that was one of the controls that I put into place is stop going to so many after hours events. Mm-hmm. And dedicate that time at home. Whether that I didn't think was going to be bad, but I still needed to be watching, then I will try and take weather watch from home. So at least I'm here and present. I may be watching the weather, but at least I'm here instead of sitting at the office. You know what I mean? So
yeah, that was difficult. Helpful. That's good. No, that's good to set those boundaries, you know, and you know the time and place to do that. I know for me, of course we don't have kids, but if especially out of town meetings, I try to usually invite my husband. It's a good time, you know. He does mainly work from home, so it's a good time he can get away, and also allows us to kind of, you know, mingle with all our other work people. And he knows several from our region as well, and in my work, and I just enjoy doing that together. And if it's after hours, I don't have a lot of those. I know you can get inundated with community events, right, in the weekends here and there. And even for our staff, I try to limit it. If we have to, we will. But it's few and far between.
Yeah, desire is different. There's people who love that. You know, if you have somebody on your staff who loves going to those community events, don't care what time it is, it's great. It's not creating a problem for them with their family, but...
Yeah. And sometimes if, you know, people want to do it and do it with their kids, I've had that before. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Take your kids. And they love handing out stuff and, you know, make it a family event. It doesn't have to be.
That's a great point. Yeah. And how do you incorporate the family into the things you're doing?
And I've had people in the past, you know, when it's a smaller weather watch, you know, their kids were a little bit older, but they would come. Sometimes we just like, okay, you monitor this channel.
Yeah.
And they'd monitor, you know, give them a task and they'd loved it.
But if you think about what you're doing with that too, not only are you creating happier employees, but healthier employees, happy and healthy are go hand in hand. You're also training the next generation in preparedness.
Right.
You may be planting the seed in the next generation to work in this field. At a minimum, you're teaching them to monitor the weather.
Know what a watch and a warning is.
Right. I mean, that's more than you can say for a lot of people, right?
Right. Right.
I know you did, so I'm not going to ask, but I didn't fully understand the difference between watch and warning, thunderstorm warning versus, you know, like I didn't know about the differences and all that before this field.
Really?
Oh, no, I didn't. That's probably something.
Were you from Texas?
Yeah.
You were from
Texas. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I grew up with it, but.
I mean,
but I was a weather weenie, so
you knew that a watch, like I knew that a watch meant something might happen, and a warning means that it is happening. You know that, like that would have been my understanding of it then. Mm-hmm. But even a tornado warning doesn't mean there's an actual tornado, right? If it's a radar indicated warning,
that's an actual tornado, Cody.
It's not.
You're gonna get Jennifer done. Radar indicated rotation. Or observed by a
radar indicated tornado does not mean that a funnel has come out of that and touched the ground.
No, not that it touched the ground, but that
that's what I mean. That's what I thought, but that's what I'm saying. That's what I thought a tornado warning meant. I thought that, like, but pre this field, I thought that if I saw a tornado warning, that meant that, you know, the movie Twister is happening outside right now. That yeah. The funnel has come down and touched the ground, and hopefully it's in a field, because if not, everything. That's what I thought tornado warning meant. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just understanding what those terms mean. I know radar indicated tornado warning means there's a funnel and all that stuff now. I didn't know that then, is what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
So, like, if in my county, what I'm looking for is or even with any of them, really, if it has that tornado warning radar indicated, then that's not, I mean, obviously the hairs go up if that's something impacting my county, but if it's like tornado warning spotter indicated, train spotter, that's what I'm like, ooh, this bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I always find myself going, okay, the warning, you know, gets issued, but go back. Okay, what is really happening? You go down a few lines and it says quarter size hail or
right.
Rotation, or like you said.
And that would may fall under this severe thunderstorm warning.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But now, but you know, right. So, you know, now open that up and see what it says, because right. There's a few things that could meet that criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. Me back then, I didn't know that. If the severe thunderstorm warning meant that it's bad outside.
Get inside.
Yeah. And I still don't understand all the different warnings.
What?
Oh, gosh. Pull up the list. We're going to do that at some point. You're not going to have time to study. I shouldn't have warned you. We'll pull up the list, and I'm going to ask you what the criteria for some of those warnings are. And I bet
a dollar
we find one, at least one, that you've never heard of. Tell me right now what the criteria for a small craft inland water warning is.
I don't know what the criteria is, but I've heard of it. Specific wind.
There's so many. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, because if you're on a small craft on inland water, that's important to you.
Yeah.
But there is some, I'm probably phrasing it wrong. Jennifer's going to yell at me, but there's some sort of small craft, you know, water. And I get it, but I don't know what all the warnings are for. There's a bunch.
There is a lot. There was a lot of blowing dust and high wind warnings today.
Yeah, low visibility.
Weird than it's, it's been an active day.
Mm-hmm.
It's been
low visibility warning or fog warning.
Yeah.
And then you're going, well, wait a minute. Is it a fog warning or a low visibility warning? Which one is? Did the fog create the low visibility warning? I don't know, because I don't know what they mean.
Oh my goodness.
Here we go. Yeah, we'll have to have another NWS episode this year.
We are. We'll have to get her back on.
One of the things going
on. Speaking of which, we've got some good episode ideas coming up, right?
We do. We have some good interviews coming up, too. So, but yeah, bringing it back full circle. One of the things I heard recently, I'll share this with you, Maribel, this guy, and I can't remember his name, but he's like a productivity expert. He just has a lot of interesting content. But anyway, he talks a lot about productivity, and I like one of the things that he says. He said that productivity is essentially looking at the place that you want to go and looking at where you are and identifying all the friction that exists in between you and that place and then removing it.
Removing the friction. Interesting.
Removing the friction. So there may be a lot that you have to do, like we talked about. Some of it you may not have a choice, right? But is there a way you can be more efficient in doing it? You know, you may have to collect a lot of information for X, but you also may have to collect a lot of information for Y. Can you do that at the same time? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways that you could probably identify ways to remove friction.
Well, that's a good thought, right? You want to be productive. You want to be efficient with everything, competing priorities that an emergency manager may have. And if you have a team, then you're also leading them and dealing with all the administrative aspects to a job. And then if you have a response, I mean, do you visit daily kind of what you've got going on? Do you have staff meetings weekly or daily? Kind of help set the tone for the office and seeing how you can be more productive.
We typically, you know, we're working on this radio. My office is project managing our radio infrastructure upgrade. A lot has changed since then. But to answer your question, typically we will try and do staff meetings after commissioner's court. So it's every other week.
That's not bad. So everybody kind of knows their taskings, as I'm sure you'll have a ton of meetings every day, kind of going everybody in and out.
Yes. Yeah. It's rare if I have all of my staff in the office at the same time.
Yeah.
Including me. So if I'm there with, and then all of the rest are there also, that's pretty rare. I also have a non-traditional schedule. So that's part of it.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
But that's for the most part, staff kind of gets to set their own schedule. I know that sounds weird. It's not like if you want to work 4:10s, you can. If you want to work 5:08s, you can. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
It's
not strictly 8 to 5, right?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a morning person. You know that. If you're listening to this, know me, you're laughing because you know I'm not a morning person. Schedule a meeting for 8 o'clock in the morning and I will show you a meeting that I will not show up for. But if you are a morning person, then I'm not going to tell you can't come to work at 7.
Right, right. Because there's people, right, that have kids in schools, and so they prefer to get there earlier so they can go pick up their kids and be done with the day. Mm-hmm. So I get that.
Well, or the opposite. The kids are all gone and we're in, you know, like grandma, grandpa and have a lot of hobbies. And for that person, it's more beneficial to work 4:10s and then have a longer mm-hmm. weekend.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
No, that's nice. That's good that you give that option and that your leadership allows that option.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think there's even schools that are looking at doing 4 days a week at school.
First one in the States in my county.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. They started that like 2 years ago.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. It's starting to get cool. So you're seeing it spread.
I've heard more and more about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a small 3A school was the first one. And here's what's funny. Do you know what the reason for it was?
Uh-uh.
Staff. Recruiting.
Not enough staff?
Yeah. It basically
how does a 4 day work. How does a 4 day week help that?
Longer weekend, I guess.
Oh, just they were able to recruit more staff.
Right. Like that as an incentive to come work, right? I mean, schools are like business. They compete for teachers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you've got districts that are known for paying really well and stuff. That's all competition. And that was just, they were topped out at what they could pay and were looking for other reasons and looked you know, looked at that and saw, found there's tons of benefits to it, not only for the teachers, but for the kids and blood. So implemented it. And now there's a bunch of schools looking at it.
Nice.
Yeah. But I mean, certainly if you have the ability to be flexible, here's the other thing about it too. When you think about it, I have people at the office / EOC more often because of a flexible work schedule.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because I have people, right. I have people who want to be there early in the morning. And so they're, I have some show up in the sixes hours, 6:30, 7 o'clock sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not every day. It's typically woke up early and just went ahead and got started, whatever. But yeah, I've seen some clocking times at like 6:40. I'm like, good gosh, why were you awake?
No, but then when you need them, right, when there is an activation, they're also more compelled to go in because you give them that flexibility on the normal days. Because, I think people really appreciate that.
But we also
make the same way in our office.
We also make what I call it remote. I call it AWS, alternative work site. We make that normal. And so the transition is also easy. So when you do have an activation, then it's not hard for somebody to support an activation remotely because we make working from remote places normal. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
And so if you're constantly having to figure out how to communicate with people throughout the day, then you know how to communicate with them in an activation.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You can test that
during blue sky days.
If you have a meeting that's 1 to 3, and you're about to leave and have to drive either into the Metroplex or to a neighboring county or whatever the case may be for that meeting, to me, it makes more sense for you to just go home and finish your day from home after that meeting because, one, if you come back to the office, you're not going to be here for very long. But then in the process of doing that, you're also forcing someone to test all of their remote capability.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's more productive to do it that way, in my opinion.
No, absolutely.
So
have your process.
Yeah, there's and that doesn't work for everybody. Some people, you know, I know people who are very 8 to 5, 12:30, you leave for lunch and you're back by 1 and it's, but you know, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, every office is different. Yeah, I've seen the structured. I've seen those that are a little bit more lenient, some that do half-day Fridays, some every other Friday's off. So
some have Nerf Wars.
We haven't had a Nerf War in a long time. Our office dynamic's a little bit different.
Yeah. Should bring back the Nerf War.
I know, right?
We should have like a interagency Nerf War. It's good, like go county versus county. And
oh, there you go. I know that I think the AT&T Stadium has like Nerf days.
They do. We've looked at that.
We should do that.
It's like the whole field and stuff. It's just covered with Nerf guns. And
oh my goodness. Yeah. You just bring your own Nerf gun?
No, I think they, for that event, I think they have them there for you or something. But yeah.
That's nice.
Well, there's a conversation go on forever. And I'm sure we'll have another one talking about burnout and mental health and faith as well. It will probably be something that, you know, comes up more and more, but it was just something we wanted to have a conversation about and share with people. I don't know about you, Maribel, but I've gotten questions offline about faith. I think it came, I talked about knowing your why. And it's always important to know your why. And I had somebody reach out and ask me, what's your why? And I don't mind sharing my answer. It's actually 3 things. Faith is first, family is second, and profession is third. Mm-hmm. Those are my why.
No, that's good stuff. Yeah. Same here. People reach out and I enjoy talking to them. And I know, I'm definitely not perfect. And, you know, it's always a learning process. But I enjoy having, you know, being being grounded in faith, having the purpose, you know, of God leading me through whatever paths he may have, but also be able to work with many in our profession that have that same faith to get us through the different aspects of life and why we are here.
And I think I can speak for both of us too by saying that shared faith isn't a requirement to friendship or learning or anything like that.
We work with all people of all backgrounds, of all different faiths, of non-faiths. It's we're working with people and loving people, like we were talking about earlier.
Right, all people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now there's no. I've always been even fascinated by people with different beliefs and wanting to learn more about it. Just as I would hope somebody would want to learn about mine. And having an open mind and an objective conversation about it. Right. That's unfortunately a bad, sometimes earned reputation in our faith circle, is that judgmental and not open to different beliefs and stuff like that. But and there's, you know, that reputation came from somewhere. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying that's not me and Maribel.
Yeah, no, we're imperfect people. And I think, you know, the church is full of imperfect people. That's why we go to church, is to, again, be kind of rooted in the path that we should go and remind us too, right, of that we should be there for others and love people of all different thoughts and all different faiths.
Right. And to remind us to take care of each other and ask each other for help, even though we're contributing to each other's mental illness.
Now I'm going to be like, oh, I should have changed that. I'm just joking.
I hope nobody takes away from this because I don't know if I should have asked.
No,
reach out and ask for help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just more to the mentality of our culture.
Right.
I would probably be worse off if I knew you needed help and didn't ask.
Yes, absolutely. If we heard it in the next morning, we're like, what? You should have reached out to
her. Yeah. But like Maribel said, we've got a lot coming up this year. Hopefully at some point we'll figure out how to use Discord and some of these other fancy tools. And I don't know, maybe we'll hire an intern that's like in high school that knows how to use all these.
There we go.
Get the high school. It's so true too.
I know. Talk about priorities. I guess that's just not one of our priorities, right?
It's not. I mean, I love it. I love the technology. I just, it's like the amount of time on certain things, because, you know, I've dove into certain sides of technology pretty heavy, but like some of these, it's just like, yeah, that looks cool. I just don't want to figure it out.
Yeah. No. That just doesn't, yeah, like I said, I was like, yeah, it looks cool, but I just don't have, yeah, I have no desire to figure it out. I probably should. You probably should tell me why I should, and then I'll figure it out, or I'll get John on it, my husband.
There it is.
Figure this out for us. Yeah.
he'd probably look at you and then like 30 minutes later be like, done. Like, yeah, no. Like, really? We've been trying to figure that out for a year.
Yeah.
Well, I hope what we talk about today helps somebody, and, you know, at least it helps with some of that conversation. And I think talking about burnout in our own mental health within our own community is an important conversation to have, and one we should keep having. I'm sure we'll have more in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Great topic, Cody. Thanks for bringing it up. And I look forward to future podcasts, and the TDEM conference is coming up in a few months. So we'll be looking to line up possibly something then as well.
Yeah. Until then, everyone, keep taking care of yourselves and keep getting ready for this upcoming wildfire season.
Thanks, everyone. Good luck. Bye.